Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and I'm here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. on the Progressive Radio channel. On Connect the Dots, every week, we connect the dots between your personal health and our total health environment. Everything that we need for health, from healthy food, health care, healthy water, air, and earth, and a healthy society. So every week on Connect the Dots, we discuss different facets and aspects of what constitutes our total health environment and what we can do to solve problems and upgrade it. So we speak with different thought leaders, entrepreneurs, advocates, doctors, and others every week on Connect the Dots to look at all of the different vectors and factors that influence our health and to bring you ways to get involved with advocacy, learn about new approaches, and in general, upgrade health both for the me level and for the we level, and that's what we do every week. I'm a 20-plus year journalist of health, food, and the environment, reporting on the Huffington Post, Alternet, and a variety of other platforms. You can sign up as well at my website, healthjournalistblog.com. And we feature a lot of actions. This week we don't have one, although in the past we've reported a great deal on fracking in the Northeast region, and some of those concerns are heating up again, so in coming weeks we'll be reviving that. We also have a whole run of about a month or two of really excellent programs with some super people, which I'll let you know more about later on in the program. This week, I'm very excited to have a terrific guest who's doing something really filling an unidentified niche that I have long spoken of and noted, and I was so thrilled when I heard about what James Maskell is doing, and I know that anyone who is concerned about health will be very interested too. He's the guest today on our show. He's the CEO of Revive Primary Care, a new project dedicated to restoring health in America by putting together a terrific, unique, and a digital education platform that will help bring together health practitioners with the public and with health advocates, like all our listeners. We'll be talking a lot about that, as well as an upcoming article that he has that I know will interest many people. I'm thrilled to welcome to Connect the Dots, James Maskell. Welcome to the show, James.
Oh, thanks so much, Allison. It's great to be here with you today. I really appreciate the opportunity to chat with you, and thanks for the big introduction.
One of the things that's been so interesting for me over many, many years, you know, is to hear the kind of the debate over what should constitute our healthcare. We're in a recent situation where the rising healthcare costs, the needs to address them, and the lack of cost-effective preventive care has driven up costs to such a degree that because some people kind of didn't want to pay the price tag on some of our societal choices, that it actually shut down the government and threatened to topple the entire world economy. It's very clear, as has long been predicted, that we're approaching a breaking point on health. And one of my longtime frustrations, and I'm sure it is yours too, is the fact that there are solutions ready to hand. I have covered, as a health journalist, integrative health for, as I say, 2+ decades, benefited from it for more, and I've also, as a reporter, had an opportunity to go all around the country and really see what some very advanced practitioners are doing. I think that in terms of a healthcare revolution, the integrative medical community, through doctors like Andrew Weil and Deepak Chopra and many others, have done a terrific job in kind of letting people know about basic self-care options, healthy diet, exercise. They may not be cheap to access in terms of healthy foods. It may not be easy to do in terms of finding time in your schedule to take, calm down or get exercise or whatever is needed. But I think the public, whether they're able to enact it fully or not, has really gotten a very complete message about basic self-care strategies. What there's been a huge gap in people understanding is the deeper healing potential of integrative approaches once you have symptoms or chronic disease, which is really the case for a very large number of Americans. So what happens is, you know, we kind of try to do what we understand is the right diet piece. Maybe we take a few supplements and go to the chiropractor. But then if there are more serious chronic illness or symptoms, health problems, people are driven back into the conventional medical system, which really doesn't have good approaches for that. So we've had a gap between, you know, what I can basically derive from a book and follow up on, and what, you know, what kind of health advice I might need if things get, you know, if some, there's some symptoms that present. And I think that Revive Primary Care is really stepping up to fill that gap. So tell our listeners more about that service.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Alison. So, you know, essentially what we're doing at Revive Primary Care is looking to provide something a little bit more complete to people. So most people in America know that their lifestyle choices can make some impact on health. And yet their doctor doesn't reinforce or believe in that. You know, they don't know anything about that. Typically, the majority of doctors don't. And so you get into the situation, a lot of people see where they're getting conflicting information, and people who are confused or are conflicted don't really do, you know, don't make progress. And you mentioned a lot here, like the acute care system in America is bar none the best in the world. You know, we really have great acute care. If you get hit by a bus, if you have an acute infection, you know, there are, we have the tools and we've led the world with this, but our chronic care has not caught up because our chronic care has just been a function of our acute care, and they're completely different things. And we need to stop treating chronic disease like treating it with acute types of tools because it's not working. And you made a great point there. All around the world, people are struggling to pay for the kind of interventions that we're doing now. You know, in America, it just brought the government to a standstill. In Britain, where I grew up, there was just a report a couple of weeks ago saying, you know, we're not going to be able to, they have a single payer system in England, and everyone says, oh, we should go to single payer in America. Well, it's not helping either. They're for the first time realizing that they're not going to be able to pay for all of the services. The government's not going to be able to pay for all of healthcare in England. So, you know, whoever's paying for it, it's not cost effective, and that's because we're applying acute medicine principles to chronic disease. And if you look at the CDC, they'll say that 75% of healthcare costs are coming from diseases that are entirely preventable. And that's where the leverage is, and that's where Revive Primary Care is starting to work. So we've identified over the last 8 years that network of doctors around the country that are skilled in working with the causes of chronic disease, and we basically outline four major causes. We educate people on those four major causes. We give them action steps by which they can take action on working with those four major causes of chronic disease, and then go to a doctor who understands those four causes and can help to work with them. And you're right, the numbers are staggering. There's 50 million Americans with an autoimmune disease. There's more than half of Americans with some sort of chronic disease. But if we can really start to take advantage of those four causes of chronic disease and engage a shift in people and in their habits, but also backing that up with a doctor that really understands that and can support those choices, I think we have a real opportunity to make a serious dent in these numbers. And just another number to throw out there, it's predicted that chronic disease management will cost in America, without you know, all else being equal, will cost $47 trillion, that's trillion with a T, over the next 20 years. So if you think, you know, if we could just cut a third off of that, $15 trillion or so, that's the whole national debt right now. So there's a massive problem, but there's a massive opportunity, and that's what we're in the business of trying to solve.
A couple of questions. I mean, is it just about these practitioners supporting people and eating healthy and all of those choices? Because, you know, once things have progressed to a certain point, I think there can be huge inroads made through nutritional changes in many cases, but it sometimes needs to go further. So is your vision extending further into integrative approaches, or is it pretty much supporting the kind of lifestyle changes that, you know, people have been recommended to undertake?
Sure. Well, diet is just one of the four causes of chronic disease. Mm-hmm. So yes, dietary shifts is just one of those. But there are three other ones that we talk about a lot that are really driving chronic disease that these doctors can help with. So one of those is stress. You know, stress is the driver of the majority of visits into primary care physician. Stress is a driver of all types of chronic disease, and chronic stress, being in the fight or flight response and having a, you know, having a, having a sympathetic dominant nervous system and sympathetic overdrive. This is really where the majority of Americans live, and this is, you know, this is a driver of chronic disease. So we have, you know, as well as diet tools, we have, you know, these practitioners have tools to deal with stress, and there's lots of other tools. You know, yoga is mainstreaming, meditation is mainstreaming. You know, there's lots of different tools online, and what we do at Revive Primary Care is we curate these tools for practitioners. So, I mean, for patients. So, you know, they're going to have this relationship with this one practitioner, but there are other really cool tools out there. So stress is a driver. Another driver is toxicity. And, you know, it's funny how in America, it's not funny really at all, but it's interesting how, you know, we have no problem understanding acute toxicity, acute toxic interventions where something happens, but we're not really that good at understanding chronic low-level toxicity and how that plays a role in the development of chronic disease. And so here's an issue where you see you can, you know, by whatever markers you want to measure, Americans are more toxic than ever before. If you look at the number of chemicals in the bloodstream, or if you look at, you know, there's a thousand different ways you can determine that, the number of environmental pollutants that are around. And, you know, at a very low level, one day of exposure to those toxins isn't going to make a noticeable difference to your health, but ongoing exposure is. And one of these practitioners, what these practitioners are all skilled in, is supporting the body's natural detoxification methods. Our body is an unbelievable system for detoxification, but, you know, just over years of neglect and abuse, you know, those filters, the liver and the kidneys and the lymph, are all things that, you know, all parts of the body that are working on our behalf all of the time, and these practitioners are very skilled in tuning up those systems to be able to ongoing detoxify. And I just want to mention one thing particularly is the lymph. I interviewed Dr. Ronald Hoffman, who's a leading light in integrative medicine, last week, and he told me that no doctor in America, no medical school, is training anything on the lymph system, apart from maybe a swollen lymph gland, you know, in the case of an infection. The lymph is unbelievably important, and it's more and more important in a toxic world, and your doctor knows nothing about the lymph system for detoxification. There's twice as much lymph fluid as blood. This is insane. We need to get patients to doctors who understand how the lymph works. I mean, that is just a no-brainer to me. And then the fourth part, the fourth cause of chronic disease, which you really have to look at, is immunity, and particularly the human microbiome. In the last 2 years, our understanding of the bacteria that lives on and around us all the time has changed 180 degrees. We used to think we were mainly human, and then there were these bugs that came along and gave us diseases. Now we're seeing it's actually the opposite, is that for every cell in our body, there's 10 times as many microbes, bacteria, viruses, fungus, and parasites. And actually, we live in direct harmony with them, or we should be living in harmony with them. Unfortunately, we spent the last 100 years abusing them significantly with antibiotics and lifestyle and food and all kinds of things, and now they're fighting back. We're seeing superbugs. We're seeing strains of things. We're seeing, you know, new types of diseases that people are getting, and we're also seeing that a reduction in the microbiome is triggering allergies and asthma and all of these things. You know, my dad lives in South Africa. In the rest of the world, you don't have the rates of pediatric allergy that we have in America. And that's because, you know, typically kids are going through how many different courses of antibiotics in their early years. And in those formative years, the body is really working out what they should be scared of and what they should be, you know, what is a foreign object and what self. And we're completely messing up the programming by putting these very strong interventions like antibiotics into the body. So,
you know, I was just going to mention that when you said earlier that, you know, acute, you know, that conventional medicine is really good for dealing with acute ailments, like infection, because I was about to say, you know, we're kind of, that was really its heyday, its holiday was, you know, the discovery of antibiotics and you know, the Salk vaccine and all of that for polio. And that was really how conventional medicine back in the 50s won a lot of followers. But we are now sadly approaching, you know, the end of the line on the efficacy of antibiotics. Both in terms of their overuse in, you know, on human beings, as you mentioned, and the harm they do when used too early to kind of block a child's ability to build, you know, a healthy immune system and gut and everything, and with a healthy biome, microbiome, as you mentioned, from the earlier years of life. But there's also another reason, which is we overuse them in agriculture. They're used, you know, in livestock agriculture. And in fact, that's the primary cause of antibiotic resistance, which means that, you know, the bugs have evolved and fought back, and we don't have the same tools that we had earlier through using them as a quick fix and overuse. And that also ties in with, you know, both personal choice in terms of, you know, how people will elect to treat their child, you know, and to kind of deal with childhood infections in their children, and as well as how we deal with them, you know, in adults. But it also has to do with choices that are made beyond, you know, our personal health choice, that are made in terms of, you know, the larger systems that have abused these tools to the point that they are less functional, sadly.
Absolutely, yeah. In fact, the director of the CDC this week just said we're moving past the antibiotic era. You know, there's not going to be, there's no antibiotics coming down the stream of production that are going to be the new greatest thing. And so we've hit the edge of this paradigm. We've hit the edge of finding a bug and killing the bug. And so there's literally no strategy that they're coming up with that's sensible. And I think that what the leading light is and what's so exciting is now, wow, we really understand the microbes. We understand that more than 99% of them are actually benevolent. They're actually, you know, helping us. We need them and they need us. They help us with our digestion, our immunity, our metabolism. They're so crucial. And so this is the next stage in our, you know, evolution of medicine, to really understand that, you know, what science, you know, reductionist science really gives us a very shallow understanding of very deep truth again and again and again. And the deep truth is that we have a very complex relationship with these microbes, and they're mutually beneficial, the majority of them. Actually having more of these microbes there that are beneficial really affects our ability to deal with infection, and it's the immune system. It's 70% of the immune system's in the gut. So, you know, by honoring that and by getting into a situation where we're building up the robustness of our microbiomes, we're actually preventing chronic disease. So these are the four areas that I feel are really under our control. These are what we call the modifiable factors of chronic disease. And what my team does is we market the concept of having a doctor that understands this as your primary care physician. We educate you on these four causes of chronic disease and other interesting things along the way, and then we partner you with a physician who does this kind of work in your zip code. And that's basically the point of Revive Primary Care.
Well, that's fantastic. And, you know, just one further point too, you know, I think the message that there is a kind of mutual collaboration between our cells and bacteria and microbes and everything, rather than that we have to kind of go out and kill anyone that might appear, you know, has parallels on larger levels. You know, when we think about, you know, how we all coexist in this world, you know, so there's a kind of divisive self and other view that has come about through American individualism that really actually isn't relevant to the truth. And it's not true on the, you know, most minute microbial level, and it's not true on larger levels either, that we can just sort of, you know, dispense or do in other people's, you know, that don't agree with us or that seem to be in the way. So, you know, there's a kind of new wisdom coming in across the board, and what you're describing typifies that. You know, my next question for you is, I think it's so fantastic. In effect, you're also kind of functioning as a referral service. Are there actually, you know, is there a body of competent practitioners to refer to? And what are your criteria, as well as, you know, are these doctors, other practitioners, you know, what kinds of, are there enough people in enough locations to serve the population, or will this, do we need more practitioners in these realms, and will this service sort of help drive that? Because I've heard tell, you know, of people, very competent medical practitioners, you know, in you know, doctors who want to practice this way, but they have trouble finding patients who, you know, were sort of schooled this way. So I know you're doing educational programs to address that, but are the practitioners there? Where do they come from?
That's a great question, Allison. Yes, they are there, and for the first time ever, they are here. You know, you look at something like the Institute of Functional Medicine, which has been sort of headlined, was started, you know, 30 or 40 years ago, and is now coming into the mainstream because of doctors like Mark Hyman, who's now Katie Couric's doctor. You know, Dr. Oz has been a champion for functional medicine for a long time. So yes, the thoughts are getting out there. And yeah, for the first time, there is really enough of these practitioners around, I think, to at least start the process. You know, if 350 million Americans all wanted to have this kind of care tomorrow, we might have a bit of a backlog in getting things together, but there's enough across the country. In every town now, there is, you know, a practitioner doing this type of medicine. And in most cases, they are functional MDs and specialists who are moving into, you know, integrative medicine. There are some primary care doctors doing it. I just came back from speaking at a conference in California called Heal Thy Practice, which is basically for mainstream doctors who want to move into integrative. And it's not, it's about the clinical, but it's also about how to make this work practically, because typically what you're doing is you're drawing out of insurance. So once you draw out of insurance and you're not really taking insurance, how do you make it cost effective for people? There's a lot of innovation happening in this area, Allison. There's people doing group visits for chronic disease, which is really exciting. There's a lot of benefits to treating people as a group, particularly when they have lifestyle diseases like heart disease, like you know, like diabetes and obesity and those types of things. So, you know, there's a lot of value there. But to answer your question, you know, the majority of them are doctors, but what we're also seeing is a lot of nurses. You know, I think nurses are very much well tuned into taking care of people and understanding these other areas. So you'll notice on drug ads on the TV now, they don't say, ask your doctor if Senapro is right for you. They say, ask your medical practitioner, because they know that in all of the Walgreens around the country and in all of the CVSs and in all of the Walmarts, now they're putting nurses and nurse practitioners in there to be primary care in these other businesses. So, you know, nurses are stepping up to take in primary care. You know, in 17 states around the country, you now have naturopathic doctors that can provide primary care and are providing primary care. And I think you'll see a lot more movement in that direction. And then some of these people that we're going to refer to are, you know, holistic practitioners who have traditionally been holistic only. You know, there's osteopaths, there's acupuncturists, there's even some chiropractors who have gone above and beyond in learning through these organizations like the Institute of Functional Medicine, like the American Board of Integrated and Holistic Medicine. There are these organizations. ACAM is another great organization, the American College for Advancement in Medicine. These organizations are doing great education and have been doing for many years, and it's just starting to hit critical mass because these doctors realize that they need to control their own destiny of their practice. And with Obamacare coming in, there's a lot of talk about Obamacare for patients, but I want everyone to know that Obamacare is not very ideal for doctors. And in fact, a lot of doctors are looking for ways not to do it. You know, the compliance is very tricky. If you think it's tough getting money from insurance companies now, it's going to be even tougher to get it from back from the government. And so they're looking for innovative ways to be able to do that. And I think the internet will help that. There's a lot of people incorporating Skype visits or email, you know, answering email. There's a lot of concierge medicine where you pay a certain flat rate and you get as much medicine as you need from your primary care provider. But one of the reasons why I'm in this country, Allison, and I'm not in England, I was born in America, but I grew up in England, my parents are South African, is the reason why I think America has a lot of potential to overcome this and actually lead the world in doing something different and showing the way is because we do have competition, and we do have a market mechanism where people like me can innovate and create something that's new and interesting, and there's potential for it, you know, for it to work out. And in, actually, right at this time, with the interest in holistic medicine and the political and the digital and the economic factors all playing in together, it's actually like this perfect storm of situations where I think this is really going to fly and really going to thrive. And what we're trying to do at Revive Primary Care is really just make it a great deal for everyone, make it a great deal for the patients. Because as I said, you know, if 350 million Americans signed up for Revive Primary Care today, we couldn't probably get them into a doctor straight away in their zip code. However, what we could do is help them to realize that the majority of chronic disease is being driven by these four modifiable causative factors. We could help them to see what role iatrogenic pathology is playing in their health. And iatrogenic is the third leading cause of death in America. Iatrogenic means as a result of medicine or doctors. That's the third biggest killer in America, depending on how you, you know, how you work it out. But, you know, there's a lot to be said for the drugs that you're taking. How are they affecting your health? And there's, you know, there's more and more studies coming out with that. So if 350 million Americans signed up for Revive Primary Care tomorrow, I think it would be great because we'd be able to at least take people through this starting point of this education process that we have. And then, you know, as Mark Hyman and other people say, the leverage in this process, the leverage in your healthcare from now to eternity, particularly with chronic disease, is in what you're willing to do. And that's why these doctors are moving from this very, like, patriarchal relationship where they're the boss and you're the patient and they're telling you what to do, which is great for acute medicine. It shouldn't be a two-way conversation in acute because the patient doesn't know anything, the patient's not really involved, and the doctor is involved and they need to take control of the situation. Whereas in chronic disease management, it's really a partnership for the patient and the doctor because it doesn't matter what drugs or what interventions or what supplements they recommend. If you're still eating McDonald's three times a day, if you're still having a massive post-traumatic stress issue every time your water or heating bill comes through the mail, if you're still, you know, taking antibiotics at any sign of a sinus infection or a viral infection, which they don't work for at all, and if you're still exposing yourself to toxins in the home, in the house, in your work environment and not doing anything to help it, it's not going to work. No intervention is going
to
work.
You know, I just have to intervene here, too, because, you know, here's the thing. You know, I think there's a lot of things that people can do, but I also think that there's a big limit to what people can do, you know, and is this only for people who are affluent? Because, you know, we're having a decline in the middle class. The reason a lot of people go to McDonald's is not through personal taste choice, but because those foods are subsidized and it's the, you know, it's the only food they can afford. You know, so to put it on the personal choice and the patient, I agree that there's a place for that and there's more that people can do, and I really applaud you for doing that. But I think that, you know, for 30 years that I've been in this movement, we've been selling people a fiction that, you know, they can alter the situation, you know, the kind of food context they live in, you know, by personal choice. They could avoid stress in an age of synergies between climate change and global warming, you know, by personal choice, where there's a lot of stuff that really is by social choice. The quality of our food would be better, and the foods that people eat would be better if we subsidize the healthier foods in the food system. So, you know, while I'm all for encouraging and supporting people to make the right choices, which I personally have reported on and done in my life for 30 years, you know, to just give that individual message alone is kind of not enough. I mean, there are many poor people who don't, you know, have fresh vegetables in their neighborhood. You know, there are many people that can't afford to go to a practitioner. There's a range of social factors. So I don't want to critique you because I really applaud what you're doing. You know, but by driving that kind of individual message, which we've heard a lot of, and it's saturated the society, and I agree that people can use more support, I think, you know, we're missing out on the context a little bit that we need to be paying attention to, because it's, you know, if people are going to junk food because we make it cheaper, you know, and they don't have other options, then I think we need to look at that. So I can see where this will reach a certain educated segment of the population, you know, that still has the affluence and all, and I like the idea of group educational processes and the rest of it to kind of get people on a better track, use support systems, totally brilliant. But I'm just challenging you a little bit from this individual language and these individual promises, because we've heard them for years. And, you know, and if we neglect the systems, and I realize that what you're doing is an intervention into the system as well, which I really applaud, but, I feel like we can't be naively just giving that individual promise and message, even though it is the American way to sell. And so I appreciate what you're doing so much that I'm challenging you on it.
Allison, I thank you for doing that, because it's very important, and you make some great points, and this is true. There's systemic changes that need to happen, and there's individual changes. And I completely agree. And, you know, the deck is not stacked in our favor with stress and with diet and with these other things, because these are being programmed into us as a society, and I think there's a certain amount of deprogramming that's going to be necessary in order for people to do that, and there's going to be need to be social change. What I would say is that that there's obviously not a desire at the higher reaches of control to have this happen, otherwise it would have happened a long way, a long time ago. However, what needs to happen. No, I'll just address a few things. One, Americans spend a less percentage of their income on food than any other nation on earth. So I understand that you have to eat McDonald's because you're poor, and that sort of argument, and I sort of get that. But at the same time, I've seen those ads of those people coming in at Thanksgiving and running in and crushing themselves to get another TV. People have four TVs in America. You don't need four TVs. There needs to be a re-understanding of how one spends one's money. But the bigger thing, Allison, is that what we really need to do is to get people to come in and act together as one voice, so that it's not these zillions of little people doing their own thing. And one of the things that I want to do with Revive Primary Care is, yes, engage people to take the first steps themselves, because what is really exciting is that once people take the first step, then they're willing to take another step and another step, and you get some positive momentum with that. But I want to gather people together and, bargain with a big group of people. So, for instance, a few weeks ago, I met this guy, Mark Bertolini, who's the CEO of Aetna Insurance. Mark Bertolini has had his life changed by seeing this kind of practitioner. He will tell you himself, and you can go onto our website, you can see an interview with him on CNBC, where he basically said, in 2004, he would have told you that everything that I'm talking about, these practitioners, was woo-woo and was not real. And so, he said that, and you said that. And then guess what happened? One, he had a horrific skiing accident. And two, his son was diagnosed with a type of cancer that has never been recovered. Right? So these two things happened to him, and within the space of 9 years, he can walk and have a great quality of life because he started with cranial sacral, now he sees a naturopath, now he's recommending these other Fortune 500 CEOs to see a naturopath. The CEO of Salesforce just lost 50 pounds in his first 3 weeks. So this is starting to happen. I'm sure if you've seen the film Escape Fire, you've seen the massive decreases in the leveling out of healthcare costs at Safeway and some of these other big corporations. So that was one thing. And then now his son is also the first person ever to survive this type of cancer that's being used. So, here's a guy who's, in his own words, looking to creatively destroy the insurance industry. It probably hasn't started really happening in the kind of momentum that we're looking for. But let's just say if I had 10,000 or 100,000 members at Revive Primary Care, I could go and say to Mark, Mark, we need a different type of healthcare system that incorporates this type of practitioner, and these are ways that it could work. And suddenly, I'd have some leverage to come to the table to be able to do that. So, I think that, yes, the individual mandate is important, because I think people don't come face-to-face with the fact that they can make a big change in their own health until it's crisis time, until, have a heart attack, or until they, something happens where they're in hospital and they're like, damn, I better start eating better. What we need to do is find ways to be able to start that process earlier, and I hope that my platform, Primary Care, will do that. And then
it's terrific. Now, we have to stop for station identification break here, but I totally applaud that. And actually, you know, I also agree with the need to kind of aggregate with other people, because if all of the people that wanted these kinds of services got together, as you say, then they could design, you know, the kind of health coverage for the kind of health care that they use and they want. And, you know, so if we want to continue having that, I think there's a push-pull. You know, on the one hand, if we don't do it, it could be taken away by law and regulation in an adverse environment. But the positive side is, if that we do it, then, you know, instead of creeping around the existing system, we get to change the system and have the health care we want. So stay tuned, listeners, as we go into our break. We're coming back with the second half hour with James Maskell, talking about Revive Primary Care and Connect the Dots. Stay with us. Welcome back, listeners, to the second half of Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, here with you every week at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on Progressive Radio Network. Today we're talking about connecting the dots between the kind of self-care approaches that the integrative health movement has educated us about for decades and finding your way to a practitioner and a community that can help you practice and, in fact, offer even deeper medical support, advice, recommendations, and treatment for a range of diseases or health symptoms. We're talking with James Maskell. He has launching a new endeavor called Revive Primary Care. You can find it online at reviveprimarycare.com. And this puts together people and practitioners in their region, as well as helps put you in community to solve health problems according to four basic measures that they have identified as being critical to health maintenance and promotion long term. If you missed the first half of our discussion, please go to the Connect the Dots archive, where the show will be posted later today, and listen to it if you're just joining us. If you've been listening to the show all along, please like us on iTunes and share this program with your friends who you think might be interested. You can go to the Revive Primary Care website as well for more educational information and to connect to a practitioner for yourself. And I certainly urge you to do that. You know, I don't know if in going back here to our conversation, James, one thing you said in the last half hour really interested me, and that was you were talking about an insurance executive whose son had an untreatable cancer, and he went from being kind of a naysayer who thought that integrative health was kind of just a woo thing, as you described, to really being a proponent, because he got to the kind of advice and support and treatment that could actually help his son recover from an ailment that, you know, no one had ever recovered from. So, you know, at the beginning of the show, I mentioned the fact that there are deeper levels of treatment for more acute and serious illnesses that some practitioners also offer. And I am curious, because I think most people just think, oh, it's just I have to change my diet and meditate, and, you know, I don't need to go to a practitioner for that. But, you know, there are certain kinds of treatment that also can deal with a lot more serious problems, and I've seen that throughout my work. So I wonder, do you know what kind of treatments he availed himself of to, you know, get to this amazing recovery?
I know it was a combination of different things, Allison, and that's typically what we see, is it will be a combination of different modalities. But the basic premise of functional medicine is very different from the premise of traditional medicine. And traditional medicine, we see a symptom. You know, doctors are trained like this. It's an algorithmic approach. You see a symptom, assign that symptom, it becomes a disease, you know, it gets called a disease, and then there's a certain treatment protocol for getting rid of that symptom. And again, that's very valuable in acute disease, but it's not so detailed in chronic disease, because in chronic disease, you could have multiple different causes causing the same symptoms. And so you need to really be able to unlock those different causes. So I don't know the specifics of his son, but I hope to find that out soon when I meet with him again. But what I will say is that, you know, one of the things that's common to all of these types of progression, all of these types of interventions, is actually improving the function of the body itself. So let me just give as one example is gut function and the digestive function. You know, gut function affects everything else in the body. You know, the nutrients that you are able to get from your food are a function of those that come into the gut, get processed by the gut, and then are sent out to the rest of the body. If we look at autoimmune disease, one of the key factors driving autoimmune disease is that, autoimmune means the body attacking itself. So why would the body attack itself? It's mainly because it stops really realizing or recognizing what parts of it are self and what parts of it are non-self. And one of the reasons why that happens is that there's a new depth of research on an idea called leaky gut, where essentially there are pieces of food and other things that are coming down the alimentary canal and through the digestion that are getting through that gut lining and are actually making it into the bloodstream. And then there's no precedent for that. There shouldn't be that stuff in the bloodstream, and the body doesn't know how to deal with it, and so it starts attacking it. And then that's the beginning of the process. So one of the strategies that's common through naturopathic medicine, through functional medicine, through holistic medicine, is actually to build the function of the three main areas of the body that are all interconnected. So there's the sort of anabolism, which is the building of the body, which is the gut and the digestion. There's the catabolic processes, which is the breaking down of substances and detoxification. So we're talking about the liver and the kidneys and the spleen and the lymph and the lungs that are playing a role in that. And then there's the communication pathways, so the endocrine system and the nervous system, which are really regulating all of those. And they're all connected. If you wonder why your endocrinologist and your internist don't speak the same language, is because they're hyper-focused on their part of the body. But, you know, the word holistic has been massively misunderstood. Holism really just means that there's an interconnection of these different systems as a systems approach. And the body should be the ultimate learning tool for understanding holism, because the shin bone's connected to the knee bone. And, you know, everything, the internal organs are all connected, and they're all working synergistically. So, you know, I would say that the majority of things, if you're dealing with chronic disease, the first few things that your doctor and the practitioner will do will help you to build on those main, making sure that those systems and the function of those systems are working well. And you'll be surprised if you get those things working well. The body is an unbelievable asset. It's so good at doing what it, if it has the right things that it needs, it's so good at rectifying itself. You know, we're really seeing the reversal of chronic disease by these practitioners, and it's really no more than building a strong foundation for how the body works and then using specific tests and other things to go in deeper and see what are the causes that maybe are affecting the body at the cellular level and affecting cellular function. But what we're really talking about here, Alison, is epigenetics. Epigenetics is control above genes. That's what it means. And really what we're seeing is that, you know, that your health is a function of how your genes express in their environment, and all of the kind of things that I'm talking about with building the function and so forth is getting an environment where genes can express in an optimal way, and that's where the main control is. You know, you can't control your genetics, you can't control those type of things. What you can control is the environment by which your genes express, and that's where the leverage is for this type of medicine.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, and of course that's a brilliant explanation of it. There are people out there in medicine going, well, if we figured out the cause here, we'll make a drug for this. But the brilliance of functional medicine is really saying, let's treat the environment. And in fact, it's that same principle of let's treat the environment that I think links well with the, you know, systemic activism that we all need to be engaged with to protect our environment, which is one of my core messages. But, you know, one of the things I want to ask in this context, because I think it's a perfect setup for it, I know you have an upcoming article. It's going to be coming out in just a few days' time. People could look for it. I wonder if you'd like to venture. We only have about another 10 minutes of the show, but I'd like to see if we could briefly touch on the theme of your article, because I think it's going to create a lot of discussion and debate. So if you'd like to tell our listeners a little bit about it, they can then look for it.
Sure. Well, I've written a lot of articles. I love writing. I've written for a site called Mind Body Green for a number of years on the Human Microbiome Project and that information. But, you know, Alison, when I got into this field 8 years ago, the first two practitioners that I met were two women that had recovered their kids from autism. And so I don't say that lightly. These are two people who had autism diagnosis, And here, 8 years later, I know them, and I know dozens more like them. They have essentially got to a point where you would never know that they had these autism-like symptoms before. And actually, if you go to our website, you'll see there's an interview with this lady called Beth Lambert, who was on IMUS, talking about a new film they have coming out where they're actually going to follow kids who are on the autism spectrum for 18 months and show this, because it's happening, and it's happening all over America. People don't talk about it. People don't know about it. People like Jenny McCarthy, who spoke about her journey, are completely lambasted in the press and continue to be, and so forth. And I think that that was my initial experience in this world. So I saw this happening in front of my own eyes. I know these kids, and I was like, okay, we're going to have to look differently about this and see what's going on. So, you know, I was definitely the weird kid at school who did alternative medicine. My parents were really into it. And so I remember that I was really the only kid at school who probably didn't get vaccinated. I remember everyone else had to stand in line and they had to get their vaccines. And, you know, this really opened me up to thinking about vaccines generally as a medical intervention and their value, you know, in a society where communicable disease is not really a problem anymore. You know, our levels of communicable disease and particularly our levels of mortality from communicable disease are almost at zero. And I know, the sort of the traditional literature would be that that was caused as a result of vaccines. But, you know, one thing you have to do, and when you get into this, is you have to start really realizing what's truth and what's marketing. And to give you guys all an example that everyone can think is, you know, everyone buys a diamond ring when they get married, you know, the diamond ring when they get engaged. And that's like a thing. And people think this is this cultural thing and it's really valuable. But I'm here to tell you today that the only reason why that is a cultural thing is because De Beers Diamonds, that very skillfully controls the diamond industry, had a marketing campaign about it in the 40s, and it just became part of culture. Now everyone buys diamonds, mm-hmm. and diamonds are a thing that, you know, people think have intrinsic value but really don't. The price is artificially suppressed or artificially kept high because they suppress the... De Beers has such control over everything that they essentially keep the price high. There's a great article on it. It was written online, and then it was reposted on the Huffington Post. And if I can just capture your attention with that example, maybe I can tell you that, you know, we have an industry that since the Flexner Report in 1913, which was the Carnegie-sponsored report that basically looked into medicine and what worked and what didn't, and really caused this revolution in medicine where penicillin came out and you could see diseases. And I have a lot of respect for those acute interventions, but I really see that we're reaching another level where we have to change our thinking. I think that the line between pure science and vaccine and marketing on vaccines is something that if people knew about, they would be really think twice about vaccinating as aggressively as we do. Now, to put into context, you know, America has 1 in 6 kids that are developmentally delayed. In New Jersey now, there's 1 in 25 kids on the autistic spectrum. Now, I'm certainly not saying that all these issues are being caused by vaccines, but the vaccine court, which was mandated by the 1986 Childhood Vaccine Act that went through in 1986, 80-odd kids have been able to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that vaccines did cause their brain encephalitis or other kinds of issues. And so there is proof that, you know, this is happening in some kids, but again, it's a spectrum. You know, modern medicine is really like you either do have a disease or you don't, but obviously there's a spectrum. And if we look at the 1 in 6 with learning difficulties, there's obviously something that's driving this that is an intervention that's happening in America that's not happening in other countries. And in my article, essentially, I'm a dad, I've got a 6-month-old baby, and through this world that I've been introduced to and through going to lectures and going to conferences and hearing about our understanding of the microbiome and our understanding of, you know, which has changed completely. It should be rocking the germ theory completely. Things should be changing, you know, at speed, but it's not. And, you know, what I'm concerned about is now this has really come into my world because I have to choose now whether I'm going to vaccinate my daughter. And basically what I'm trying to put together is a 10-step rational explanation for why I haven't. And I hope that it'll resonate with those people that have had concerns about it, but have not really been able to articulate it communicate very well to their friends and family, because there's a lot of people out there that don't do this. And I hope, you know, for the people who obviously are going to think I'm the devil for writing this article, for proposing this, you know, I'm not telling you in the article this is what you should do. I'm just trying to lay out a course for why I've done this based on my research. And I'm also open to changing my decision. If people can come onto that site and, you know, go over my 10 issues that I bring up and debunk them one by one, you know, I would change my decision. But I really feel like, you know, the power and the control that one industry or one particular small group of people have had over a huge industry has distorted the information. We've got stuck between marketing and science, and there's this other part in the middle that is, you know, that is concerning, and that's what I'm going to address in my article. And part of the reason why I'm going to address it is because I can address it. I'm not a doctor. I'm a parent. I'm having to face these decisions. It's normally mums talking about this thing, but I'm a dad, and I'm passionate about this kind of information, and I want, you know, us to have a rational communication strategy about vaccines and how relevant they are and how important they are in a world where communicable diseases doesn't kill anyone or hardly anyone. You know, the mortality from these communicable diseases is growing, is falling off, and it's falling off in other places around the world as well. You know, I've got a friend who works for Yale, and she's going to Ethiopia and other countries in Africa to work on their health systems, and their biggest issues are non-communicable diseases. You know, I heard Jeff Bland speak a few months ago, and he went to do a talk in China in 1991, and he said, you know, diabetes and obesity, and they said, hey, you know, that was a great talk, but we don't have diabetes and obesity, and now 30 years later or 25 years later, it's the biggest thing in China. So this is coming. I think we need to have a real rational sit down and understand the causes of chronic disease. And I think if we really understood the causes, it's really those four things that I spoke about earlier. You're introducing foreign toxins into the body, you're introducing foreign microbes into the body, you're introducing stresses into the environment, into the body, and you're shifting the dietary things when you do that. And so here are four of the main causes of chronic disease in one injection. I think we need to really think through exactly what's happening with these kind of things. And I think that I hope that starting to have this conversation in a rational and, non-judgmental and empathetic way will start to open up to a bigger conversation of what are the causes of chronic disease. And we're getting precious little information as to what is causing them. But the information that's coming out is pointing at either medical interventions. There was just a thing a couple of days ago about Tylenol and ending, you know, if you artificially end a fever early, you know, is that making some long-term changes to the immune system that is undesirable? Toxicity is a huge issue, not only environmental toxicity, but, you know, one of the arguments I make in the article is that your body is unbelievably well set up to be able to deal with environmental toxicity if it comes in through the nose or the mouth. But if you inject it into someone, all of those things get bypassed. And, you know, I'm concerned about this topic. I think it's an interesting topic to stir debate. My goal is not to tell people what to do. My goal is to really open up some discussion into a topic that is hugely important for everyone.
And I agree with that. And, I think that's terrific that you're doing that article. I urge our listeners to look out for it on Mind Body Green. You know, one further point is that you were describing earlier how, you know, health comes from the interaction of our genes with the environment. And so on one hand, getting minor infections and all the rest of it is teaching us, teaching young children or training the rest of us in adapting to the environment. So that's not something to shut down cavalierly, you know. But the other issue is that everyone has different genes. And so we're vaccinating as a kind of across-the-board prescription without knowing who may have the genes that might make that child more vulnerable to, you know, a spectrum of reactions where another child could handle it just fine. So, you know, if we were able to individualize, or there were factors that people were looking at rather than a universal prescription, I think, you know, there could be, sort of a compromise point in all of this. But without that and just saying everybody needs it, when we see, you know, that there's a range of problems evolving, we're not really looking to causes, and that's really one of the most fundamental problems with the sort of blanket prescription health approach in any side of the spectrum. I want to thank you so much for being with me today on Connect the Dots. This has just been terrific. I really wish you a lot of success and luck with this terrific venture. Revive Primary Care. Listeners, both to get the kind of information that James Maskell is putting out there, as well as to connect with practitioners in your own area, or, you know, if you have friends or relatives who say, well, gee, you know, I'm not dialed into that community. I don't know where to go. I'm having problems doing what I know to be healthy. You could also send them there. And then together, people will both, you know, have access to this kind of care, be able to do more for themselves, as well as form, you know, a kind of body of a community that can really get the kind of health care we want and the kind of healthy society we need in order to have health. So thank you so much, James, for being with me today on Connect the Dots. Just delightful to have you.
Thanks, Allison. It's been great to be here. Thank you for your time.
And thank you, listeners, for being with us. We'll be back next week at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on Connect the Dots. And we have some terrific guests in upcoming weeks. We're going to talk about managing emotionally in a time of climate change with Carolyn Baker. We're going to be hearing from Larry Dossey about his wonderful new book, One Mind. We'll be hearing from Victoria Mazes, a wonderful MD, about how to prepare for pregnancy and have a healthy child. We have a whole range of terrific guests on our show, and please also check out the Connect the Dots archive. This show will be there later, and you can also check out our former programs. There's a really terrific group of guests we've had. Have a great week, and thanks for listening.